Good evening. I thank Rabbi Schechter. I will call him Rabbi Schechter. For his brilliant remarks. Especially the difference between the imperative authority and influential authority. I want to maybe take that a little bit further. I think, Rabbi Schechter, you gave the imperative authority the ultimate example as Kafal Lehem Har Kegigit, in a sense of Hashem forcing the Torah upon us. Now, I think I remember myself, even as a teenager yet, when I read that midrash, it just didn't make sense. First, it didn't make sense that the Torah emphasizes Naseh v'Nishma. And everyone talks about the midrash even. He went to all the nations didn't want to accept the Torah, and here, B'nai Yisrael are accepting the Torah. So, Kafal Lehem Har Kegigit seems to go against the whole running of the Torah itself. And also, I'm just imagining, you know, like I was at Har Sinai, not that I remember it vividly, but you know, I was standing there, we were all standing there. Did Hashem really lift the mountain? I couldn't see it. Hashem lifted the mountain and held it. It didn't seem right. It didn't seem that that's the way that the Torah was given under such pressure, under such force. And from an Akashish doctrine, I remember that question bothered me for many years. And I saw a very beautiful answer given, I guess this I saw about also already 15, 20 years ago, in the book Lifrakim by Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridei Eish. He gives a very interesting interpretation on this midrash, Kafal Lehem Har Kegigit. And as we know, in the Gemara, in the midrash, many times it's a ki'ilu. We have that word, ki'ilu, comes in a lot, ki'ilu. And that's what Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg says, not literally Kafal Lehem Har Kegigit, his interpretation of the midrash, but it was a ki'ilu. The Hashem, in giving us the Torah, made such a big deal, such a big production, the thunder and the lightning and the kolot and the fire. You know, I remember I was once at a concert, I think it was a Mordechai Ben David, and I felt it was like Matan Torah. thinking about teenagers in concerts, Hashem made a big deal about it. And coming, Moshe went up the mountain, down the mountain, you'll accept it. How will you accept it? The women first, last, second, it was as if the people had to do it, that they realized that this was so vital to Hashem, so vital to the world. Also, the Shloshet Yimei Hagbalah, which I think a point that I'll bring, I think, to take Rav Schechter's words further, this the concept of Kedusha. That's also a very difficult concept to instill, but that Am Yisrael realizing that it wasn't just another textbook that we were receiving, but we were receiving a way of life, we were receiving something higher and different and above and beyond, and an inner depth and a kedusha for our whole lives and for our future as a nation. The Shloshet Yimei Hagbalah. So in this kind of a framework, it was as if he forced us, but the decision was really ours. The decision to receive the Torah was the decision of Bnei Yisrael, and the Naseh v'Nishma was a real Naseh v'Nishma and not under pressure. And I think... as parents and educators... That's an important lesson. Mahu afata. We have to make big deals and big productions out of things that are important to us and things that we think are important for our children and for the future. If children see that this is something that we're going to bring the thunder and the lightning and the colors and the fireworks and it's important and we're going to get ready and we're going to approach it in holiness and we're going to learn beforehand and we're going to understand and we're going to get together and we're going to gather, then this will, even if there's a little bit of coercion, and I'm not denying, I think there was ki'ilu kafalayim hagegigin, but it was also an aseh v'nishma that the people took seriously and took it in a willing way and went on with accepting and bringing in Torah. Another point that I think I want to add in kind of stretching this warmth and the varmkai, which again is so essential in today's society, I would say in addition, and I think I'm sure you intended, but right in an hour you can, this idea of discussion and talking. That the warmth, in addition to the singing and the inner soul of the person, but a lot of talking. Teacher to student, student to teacher, parent to child, grandparent to child. Like to discuss themes, discuss concepts, discuss personal life issues. Talking, talking, talking. I think the more that you talk to your students, the more that you talk to your children, the better it is, the better they see us as individuals, and the more that we can convey ideals and values to the next generation, and that we're believed and we're taken for who we are and value sometimes along with the influential. I think in this case, discussion is a lot of this part of the influential authority. And you know, I can't not bring in Matan here a little bit. I think I'm allowed a little bit. I said first I'll make comments not connected to Matan. I think one area where we saw this need for the influential authority was actually a program developed by one of our scholars, by a graduate of the SC here. Jenny's here, one of our scholars from many years ago. This was not developed by Jenny, but by Usha. I think she was in your time, right? Usha Karin developed a phenomenal, brilliant bat mitzvah program. What's the whole kunz of the bat mitzvah program? It's mothers and daughters learning together. 9 sessions, I think many of you living here are already familiar with it, if your granddaughters did it, or daughters, or students. It's that talking together, giving the quality time, the bonding, learning about famous Jewish women throughout the ages, but the mother and daughter sitting and learning together. And I was told by a psychologist who interviewed students last year to be accepted to the Pelech High School. So these are young women, 13 years, they're in the 8th grade, they wanted to be accepted to Pelech High School, and one of the questions asked was, name a religious, meaningful experience that you were recently involved in. And she told me, I met her socially, she told me a high percentage named the Matan Bat Mitzvah program, the learning together with the mother. So I think this also learning, and there's discussion, there's this idea of the warmth, it's a lot of interactivity with singing and dancing and movement that excites, that it's a big deal. You're going to be bat mitzvah, it's a big deal. And the big deal is not only the party. The big deal is the learning behind it, that there's meaning and depth and connection between the generations, between the mother and the daughter, in the coming of age, in the coming of acceptance of Torah. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. First of all, thank you again to Atid and, of course, the Yeshiva University for sponsoring this conference, and to Rabbi Schachter and to Rabbi Vina for your insightful comments. It's really truly an honor to be here with you. I don't particularly feel comfortable with the title respondent, because I think that there's a tacit connotation here that what was said before me, now I have to disagree with, and it has to be some kind of dissonance, and I would never have agreed to those terms. I think if we're going to bring this discussion into the high school classroom and into elementary school classroom, we are talking about education, I think it's important. Maybe we should be called something like a practicant, which is a very fancy word for here's my 2 cents. But I think that that's, I feel more comfortable with the 2 cents. First of all, like I said, if we're going to take this discussion into the classroom, I think it's important that there's a variety of levels on which this authority-autonomy continuum, and it is a continuum, as we've heard tonight, it operates on a variety of planes. Of course it operates on the plane of Yirat Shamayim and Shmirat HaMitzvot and Talmud Torah, of course. But for a teacher, it operates even more in the lunchroom, in tefillah, in the hallways, assigning homework and collecting homework. The student didn't do the homework. Okay, well, that was her right to do so. But now I have the authority to say, you get a zero. That sounds like a very simple question, but to a teacher, daily, often, this authority-autonomy continuum is brought into the very, very practical realm. And I think, like I said, I think that these questions and dilemmas are faced more often in the less interesting, but I think the more common areas, let's say, is homework, etc. I think it's also valuable to remember that to the teacher and to the administrator, this notion of authority is very dicey and it's very dangerous. And there's a fear that is associated with that. We all know, as parents and as teachers, of course, that employing too much or too little on this spectrum are hazardous extremes. The Gemara in Masechet Makot tells us how Rav Acha actually fired a teacher for being too harsh. So we know that happens. Of course, the Gemara continues that Ravina gave him his job back because nobody taught as well as he did. So that he can teach. He's an amazing teacher, yet too harsh. How can that be? Because it's a continuum. And striking this balance, this correct balance, between smol docha v'yamin mekarevet is really difficult. And to make it even worse, there's no guidebook, of course. There's no guidebook, and there should never, God willing, be written a guidebook, because it's impossible to write a guidebook for every single student, for every single school, for every single community, for every single minute. It's impossible. And so the teacher regularly makes these decisions. I read in an article years ago that a teacher in a class, not in a day, not in a year, not in a career, in a class, makes 2,000 decisions. Based on how far do I go, when do I review, when do I ask questions, when do I speak. And it's exactly on this spectrum of authority and autonomy. Making matters even worse and worse, I'm digging myself into a hole, but I think that the dangers are such, we remember these dangers. The Gemara in Masechet Tanit reminds us, it's a well-known Gemara to a teacher, it's written somewhere in the classroom probably, that Rabbah tells us, Im ra'ita talmid shelimdo kasheh alav kebrazel bishvil rabo she'eino masbir lo panim. If a student finds it so difficult to learn, it's not because there was no translation, it's not because of the handwriting is not clear, it's because the teacher did not have a favorable disposition. And that is also part of this, I think, authority-autonomy spectrum. And that's a big, big weight for teachers to carry. Not anymore talking about these large realms of Yirat Shamayim, we're talking about a first-grade teacher. That's very difficult. So I think that the model, for the most part, of the intimidating, unapproachable teacher is long gone. And I think that, and thank God. But I also think that the pendulum has swung so far the other way, that in the last 20 years, I would say, that the boundaries between teacher and student are often blurred. And the question was asked, how is it different? I have far, far, far more experience in the United States than I do in Israel. But I would say that my initial reaction, and I'd love to speak again in 10 years and 20 years, I won't speak that long, but I'm just saying I'm going to speak again, that in Israel, this continuum and this blurred line is really much more bold. You see it much more often. For example, I was taken, for example, the dress of the teachers, how teachers dress. This is the fact that I didn't wear a tie tonight, and the fact that I even brought a tie to Israel took a little extra room in our suitcase. But this is already very formal, as you know. First name. Many of my students, I've been there 3 months, don't even know my last name. Which is very interesting. I'm Rav Yamin. That's an interesting thing. I had a very interesting story that happened when we first moved. It was boys' night at the local swimming pool, and I was swimming with my sons, and a student dives into the pool and cannonballs right next to me. So I blush very easily, and even underwater I blushed. I'm swimming with a student, and he's splashing me, and it was completely normal. the obvious, and then he said, I even said something like, oh, I don't usually dress like this. I think I said something like that. And he said, oh, no, Ralph so-and-so was here yesterday. He dressed the same in the same suit as you. That's the blurring lines. And the fact that it happens, there's a wonderful side to that. The fact that it happens all the time, I'm still getting used to it. Or not. So much, I think that this line has blurred also in the secular world. That in secular educational philosophy, there is sort of an offshoot to the very progressive educational theory, constructivism, which an offshoot of constructivism even maintains that the teacher is not necessarily needed in the classroom. They're there to kind of guide. 80 years ago, that kind of teacher was called the knowledgeable adult. But back off a little bit and let the teacher and students do the thing. It's a beautiful thing. We call it kavruta. But we also have a shiur that often comes afterwards. So I would suggest, how do we get through all this and how do we navigate all this? I would suggest that the authority and autonomy spectrum in the classroom are really two sides of the same coin. It's a continuum, as we said. They're not mutually exclusive, but it's a continuum. And each student is somewhere on that continuum in a different place and changes all the time. She may be leaning towards one side today, and after lunch, leaning towards another side. And that spectrum, I think, happens all the time. And so I think, to put it another way, what is our job? How do we approach that spectrum? I think that one of our jobs, and perhaps our primary job, as mechanchim, is to create a sincere, authentic relationship with our students, as was mentioned, whereby the need to exercise our authority is a non-issue. I'll give you a quick example. You're pulled over by a police officer. God forbid, you're pulled over by a police officer. Police officer pulls me over. I listen to whatever he or she has to tell me. I don't know who this officer is. I never met him or her. I don't know his name. I don't know where he comes from. I have no relationship with him, but you can be sure that I will comply with everything that officer tells me. Why? Because the fear of punishment and retribution is so great that I don't need a relationship with this authority figure. But that's not a mechanech. That the word morah, thankfully, ends in a hey, not an aleph. Our job is not to be the police officers. We shouldn't be, we cannot be, and we don't want to be. Lo hakavdan melamed. It's impossible to be a police officer in the classroom. And a principal, of course, and a teacher, of course, has the power to punish. But I believe that is a derech tzara shehiyaruka. It's wonderful for the moment, and it can, God forbid, ruin a student. So again, I think that this relationship is the key. In creating this spectrum whereby we can help students come along the spectrum. I think that's part of the reason why Rabbah, for example, began every shiur with a milta de b'tichuta. I'm a human being. I have a relationship. I have a relationship with you. Now, what many people don't know is the Gemara continues. God forbid he didn't tell jokes all day. He told a joke and he continued. The Gemara tells us, this is in Psachim Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, that the Gemara tells us, yes, he started with a milta de b'tichuta. But by the time the shiur was over, the students sat there in awe. Why? Because there's this relationship between teacher and students. Having said that, I think it's important for teachers to remember that this is a process, it's an ideal. And very often, because the pendulum has swung so far the other way, I believe teachers are often nervous to punish, nervous to exercise that authority. I remember very clearly a story that happened many years ago to me. I was a teacher in a summer camp. And there was a boy who was there in camp, and he came one day, and he had a t-shirt on that had a very, I thought, a lewd comment on the t-shirt. I didn't teach this boy. I barely knew his name, but I saw the t-shirt. So I walked over to his learning rebbe, and I said, look at so-and-so. I mean, the t-shirt, it's pretty bad. So the rebbe, it's a true story. The rebbe said to me, I can't talk. I can't tell. I can't say anything to him. So I said, why not? He said, because I have a relationship with him. So I said, Rebbe Shalom, the whole reason why you have the relationship with him is so that you can go over to him. If I went over to him, I'm the police officer, or not. But you have the relationship with him. You can actually change his life because you have that relationship. I think that's exactly why, for example, we know the story in Shmuel Bet, and it happens throughout Tanakh. I think that's why, for example, when David HaMelech is told that his son Shlomo is going to build the Beit HaMikdash, and his kingdom is going to last, and there's a wonderful, rich, long-lasting relationship between Hashem and the new king, Shlomo. And all of a sudden, Hashem says, Ani yehayelo le'av. This is in Shmuel Bet Perek Zayin. Ani ayelo le'av, v'hu yiheli levein. What a beautiful, warm, wonderful relationship. Father, son, parent, child. Can't be anything stronger and greater than that. The very same pasuk, not even the next pasuk. Asher ba'avoto v'hochachtiv b'shevet anashim u'v'nigei b'nei adam. And when he wrong, and when he does something wrong, I'm surely going to punish him. I have a wonderful relationship, and sometimes I have to exercise my authority and bring down some what we call constructive critique. And the very next pasuk, v'chasdi lo yasur mimenu. So we have this relationship, and sometimes it involves punishment. Just two last points. This relationship is not only between teachers and students. This is also between students and the text itself. The student has to have a relationship with the Masorah, with the text. Another quick example. I don't know who wrote the label, the warning label on a bottle of aspirin. I don't know why they chose those words. I don't know how long they studied. I have no idea why they wrote them. But you can be sure that I'm not going to take six pills in 24 hours. Because the punishment is too great. The consequences are too great. We're not learning aspirin bottles. We're learning Gemara and Tanakh and Chumash, etc., etc. And the students have to have a relationship with the text itself to learn it, to dissect it, to take it apart, to live it, to breathe it. I think I'm a little embarrassed to quote Rabbi Soloveitchik in the presence of people who actually met him. I met him through his writings and through his words, not directly. But I think that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik was talking about when he described the beautiful description that every teacher would love to create in his or her classroom of the teacher sitting down in front of the children and teaching, and all of a sudden an old man walks into the room, and that's Rashi, and that's Rabbeinu Tam, and that's the Rambam, and that's Rabbi Akiva. How is that possible that this combination of generations, how is it possible? Because those students had a relationship with the text. The text was alive, and they had a relationship with it. And the final point, it's interesting that all three of us decided to talk about role modeling. And I think that that's important for both for good and for bad. There was a very fascinating study that was done very close to here, relatively, to people who are from the States, in the University of Haifa. And they had a study which, I guess when you read it, it seems very obvious, but to me it wasn't, and I thought it was very beautiful. They did a study of Jewish, not Jewish, secular religious schools, and they found that when teachers had a great relationship with each other in the teacher's lounge, discipline problems went down in the school itself. Why is that? I mean, it sounds amazing. Because the role model. If I am able to talk to my colleague, if I'm able to talk to my boss in a proper way, we're all on one team, imagine how I then go into the classroom. And if I'm unable to do that in the teacher's lounge, you can be sure I'm not doing it in the classroom either. I think that's a really wonderful thing. There's a reason why Gemara after Gemara after Gemara tells us that we have to have role models in the classroom. We have to have role models in our teachers and seeing them. And I think it works in reverse as well. When a teacher makes a mistake and then laughs to the students and says, don't tell the principal, don't tell the menahel, well, that's role modeling also. The principal, he doesn't come in the classroom, she doesn't come in the classroom anyway. I think that's very important as well. So I think that this relationship is perhaps the key, and I appreciate being able to be a 2-cent practicant, and I look forward to hearing your comments. Thank you very much again.